Our third case for this morning is Southern Financial Group against McFarland State Bank. And when you're ready, Mr. Whitney.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Zach Whitney. I represent the plaintiff appellant in this matter, Southern Financial Group. The case before the court's a very simple case, and it can be summarized as follows. McFarland State Bank sold collateral properties that it didn't have.
And here's what I think is simple about this case. There's a contract that governs that sale, and everybody agrees that McFarland breached that contract by listing three pieces of collateral as still available when they were not. But everybody also who looks at the contract can see that it provides for remedies. And you, it strikes me, want to have your cake and eat it too. You have sold most of the collateral that you did get. You happen to have been happy enough to realize more money than the repurchase agreement. But ex ante, you didn't know. I mean, the real estate market still could have been terrible. You could have sold those properties and recovered an amount that still left a margin. And so I don't see why, as a commercial party, you shouldn't have to live with the agreement that you made. You're not promising to tender the other side all the money you realized on the sale of the collateral, and you can't give it back anymore. So I don't see where you're coming from.
I understand. The whole intent of this agreement was to preserve the value of the bargain for the parties.
And you agreed on a remedy. You didn't have to agree that the repurchase amount of money would be the cap, but you did. And as I say, before the fact, nobody knew whether that was going to be enough or not enough, but you happened to have been fortunate enough. I guess maybe the market's been solidifying a bit. I don't see why you shouldn't be held to your bargain.
We want to be held to the bargain, and the bargain was this. If you look at the
remedy provision. No, you don't want to be held to the bargain on remedies.
So at the time that our client gave McFarland State Bank notice that it had breached the remedy, McFarland State Bank had three options. The first option was to cure.
No, it had four. It denies the breach.
So under the court's reading then, if it denies the breach, it does so under its own peril. If McFarland State Bank denies that it breached the contract, it does so with the idea that it then can be prohibited from enforcing the contract.
Why does it lose the whole value of the contract? It says we didn't breach, but the contract itself specifies the remedy.
The contract required McFarland to elect a remedy within 30 days of the breach, of notice of the breach.
So you think that anytime anybody, however frivolously, says that you breached, that you have to say, oh, okay, we breached, and so now we have to go down the path of cure or, you know, whatever else.
Under the circumstances of this agreement, if McFarland decided that it did not breach and it wanted to fight the fact that it breached this warranty, which, by the way, was readily apparent. The warranty said all of the satisfactions are within the due diligence materials. No satisfactions have been executed that are not within the due diligence materials. If it wanted to fight that Almanac fact, which is really what this is all about, I mean, very clear Almanac fact, it did so.
I agree with all that. You are not telling me why the remedy provision in your agreement went away.
The reason why the remedy provision no longer works at this stage is because it does not preserve the value of the bargain that my client
That's circular. Let me try to come at this from a different angle, Mr. Whitney. As of January 17th, 2012, the day your client complained about being short three of the collateral items, what would the repurchase price have been at that point?
The fair market value of the collateral. So the repurchase
Had you sold anything at that point?
As of January 17th, one collateral had sold, one piece of collateral, and it was the piece of collateral that McFarland State Bank themselves had accepted an offer on. And that had sold in December. That was the only piece of collateral that had sold at that stage.
Okay. And, well, let me get it. This is more complicated. Does the repurchase price and the remedy for repurchase, these repurchases, as you read the contract, are those for the whole package of loans, or are they item by item?
It's a rescission of the entire contract. Agree with that. The McFarland State Bank, in their brief at page 36, said it's rescission, and in our brief, it's rescission of the entire contract.
Well, if you guys agree on that, that's fine. It's not clear to me from the contract, but do you agree that now the repurchase price would be zero?
Actually, the repurchase price would be less than zero. And this is
so it's
why
limited by zero, right?
Nobody's going to say that you have to pay them because they breached, okay?
It is
right. So it's zero because you realized enough. I mean, here's this defined term in the agreement.
And that would have been the repurchase price of zero would have governed under either election of remedy, correct?
The repurchase price of zero, all that repurchase price is was a cap. It was a cap for actual damages.
And so it's a cap of zero for both repurchase and for actual damages, correct?
Yes, correct.
So the failure, why does the failure to elect make a difference?
Had they elected when they were required to elect, they would have written a check to Southern Financial Group for a significant amount of money. They would have written
and you
check,
would have given back all the property that you later sold for more, right?
We later so what McFarland State Bank did.
Wait, could you please answer Judge Hamilton's question, because I'm very
interested.
Yes,
we did.
In that.
We did, in fact.
So you would have given them back the properties that you later sold for more money.
We would have given them back the properties that we later sold for more money.
Right.
Here's how the agreement was required to work. At the point in time that Southern Financial Group gave McFarland notice of its breach, McFarland had three options. Option number one, to cure. They didn't elect to cure. Option number two, to pay actual damages. Option number three, 2 years ago, this was 2 years ago, was to rescind. They could have.
Where's the deadline for election?
It's 30 days. It's right in the contract.
No, no,
the contract says.
Where?
What page are you on?
I'm on page, the appendix, page 31.
Yeah?
I'm on page
31. So am I.
Too.
All right, so it says. Halfway
what paragraph?
Down, 6.3B.
Mm-hmm. B.
Halfway down the paragraph, it reads, quote, if such breach or failure
right,
is
that sentence has a 30-day period. And
for
then
curing.
It says, if it's not duly cured within 30 days.
It says, quote,
then
seller.
And where's the time limit on that?
Then seller shall elect. It doesn't
and
say.
And when is then? Is then a week? Is then a month?
It's 30 days.
No. That's
where
not
do you
what
get
it
that?
Says.
It says, the provision itself
if
twice
says 30
days.
If such breach or failure is not duly cured within such 30-day period. Okay, the 30 days after you gave the notice, then, which means some later time, seller shall elect.
I don't read that as some later time because if McFarland State Bank...
What, at the minute that the 30 days expires, during the 30 days? Where did
at the minute that the 30 days expires.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
If McFarland is not going to cure, then what sense does it make to wait any longer to repurchase
you
or to pay actual damages?
You didn't write it into the contract. Write a different contract.
The whole idea of this remedy provision is if
no,
McFarland...
No, the remedy provision does not have a whole idea. It has a lot of very specific terms that the courts are responsible for enforcing.
Fair enough.
So there's not a general idea here. You get what you negotiated for.
And what we negotiated for was the value of our bargain. Southern Financial Group negotiated
which
that.
Which was the repurchase price. You decided before you knew what was going to happen in the market, before you knew which properties you were going to sell, that you were going to be able to get all your money back
that
for this portfolio that you bought.
We agreed that we were going to get the value of our bargain.
No, you
not
didn't.
All of our
you
money
agreed,
back.
You agreed that you'd get all your money
had
back.
They
Mr. Whitney?
Actual damages.
Mr. Whitney?
Yes.
In appellate advocacy, if a member of the court is talking, it's usually a good idea to listen.
Fair enough. I apologize. I would like to save all the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
You may. Mr. Oettinger?
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name's Andy Ottinger.
Ottinger. Okay.
I represent the defendant appellee, McFarland State Bank. As the Court has pointed out, this case is governed by an unambiguous contract. The contract specifies the exclusive agreed-upon remedies in the event of a breach.
So how much time do you think you had to elect a remedy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the contract doesn't specify, certainly, and certainly it's not 30 days. However, there's a logical timeline or deadline that could be taken from the way the contract is drafted. This idea of a repurchase price, which is a formula where you start with the purchase price, which is known, and then you deduct from it certain things so that Southern Financial Group can account for what's happened, such as, has it sold property? Has it paid third parties? Has it done anything to commit waste at the property, which it's undisputed in this record that it has? Even though it's made money in spite of itself, it has committed waste at the property. But some of these items, these variables in the calculation of a repurchase price, require that Southern Financial Group certify and provide evidence of those variables. Then the repurchase price can be calculated.
So my question for you is where... I was troubled on the basis of what I've read so far that McFarland chose to notify Southern Financial that it did not believe a breach had occurred. Now, I can imagine hypothetically there could be cases where somebody might say that, but it looked to me like it was pretty clear that these three pieces of collateral had indeed left the portfolio by the time, and it was just a very obvious misstatement, and it looked to me like it was a breach. So I'm worried a little bit with a frivolous notification that there's no breach.
At the time that the initial demand was sent, and the initial demand sent by Southern Financial Group said, you've breached, pay us $519,000 within 7 days. And the reason that the breach was initially contested was because at the time McFarland State Bank didn't believe it had breached. Going back to look at the record, what it had found was it believed that Southern Financial Group had breached the agreement, because Southern Financial Group had represented and warranted that it had conducted an independent review of the title of the properties that it was going to obtain. It's undisputed in the record that this misstatement, this breach, was of public record. It was unintentional that McFarland State Bank didn't correct the asset summary. And the record reflects that when another investor, somebody else that was interested in purchasing these properties, brought this inaccuracy to the attention of the loan sale advisor, which was Mission Capital. Mission Capital checked with McFarland State Bank and said, what do you make of this? McFarland State Bank immediately advised the loan sale advisor, you're right, these have been released. Now, the loan sale advisor didn't update the disclosures. And at the same time, McFarland State Bank wasn't allowed to respond or communicate directly with Southern Financial Group. Everybody went to the loan sale advisor. So to answer the court's question, at the time it didn't believe it had committed a breach. It believed everything was of public record. And as the case progressed and as time went on, we acknowledged that we didn't correct the asset summary. It contained an error.
Well, you contested the breach up through summary judgment in the district court. Now, the 6.3B, the key provision here, frankly looks like a bit of a mess to me. And I'm wondering... what your position would be about how to apply that if the repurchase price had been a positive number and the seller simply refuses to elect a remedy. What happens then?
If the seller, being presented with the information to calculate the repurchase price...
Well, hey, we'll get to that in a second. I'm not sure you're entitled to that before you make an election, but tell me that in a minute. But if the repurchase price is positive... And you refuse to elect, what happens?
At that point, they would have to bring an action to enforce the contract. And we would calculate it, and it would be an award of damages. But in this case, it would have been a positive number. It could have and would have written a check. And the statement that the repurchase price, even to this day, couldn't still be applied, it still could be, with the information necessary to calculate it.
How do you get from the contract that you are entitled to all information you want to calculate the repurchase price before you elect a remedy?
Not all the information that we want, only that which is necessary to calculate the repurchase price.
All right, well, okay.
And that's,
where do you get that out of the contract?
It's through the definition of repurchase price, which is a defined term in the contract.
Sure, but where does it say that you have to receive that information before you elect.
It doesn't.
Thanks.
It doesn't.
Did you ever request the information you needed to calculate the repurchase price?
We did throughout, not before the initial demand was sent. The next the next response to the demand said that we needed something more specific. The next demand came saying, these are the problems we have, pay us the $519,000. We said we're contesting the breach and we're going to reserve our rights under the contract.
When did you ask for the information you would need to calculate the repurchase price?
Preceding the litigation.
When?
And during the litigation.
When?
The first communication, I'd have to look at the proposed findings of fact. It was in the months, the 2 to 3 month period prior to the filing of the action.
But it's in your summary judgment papers in the district court?
It is.
Thank you.
And it continued throughout the litigation, and it continued through discovery. And in fact, during the litigation, we got to this issue of, well, Southern Financial Group, do you even really want to unwind this contract? And during oral argument today, counsel mentioned that, well, at the time, the repurchase price would have been the fair market value of the properties, and that's not true.
Right. The repurchase price is defined in the contract, right, in the definitions section. And it's not the – I thought it started with the amount paid.
Yes, it begins with the repurchase price.
And then adjustments are made. It begins with the purchase price.
Purchase price.
At closing for
adjusted
the loans.
At closing,
and
right.
And then minus these various elements.
Exactly. Amounts paid by any person to the
and
buyer.
And plus an element.
Diminution in value, et cetera. Right, exactly.
Mr. Ottinger, could I ask you one other question? On page 30 of your brief, you're debating the whether to apply the UCC analysis about failure of the purpose of a remedy. And you discuss the Wisconsin Supreme Court's decision in Murray, and then tell us that the majority of courts, however, hold that the failure of remedy limitation does not invalidate an exclusion of consequential damages as long as it's not unconscionable, and you cite a number of other authorities. I think you're asking us there to disagree with the Wisconsin Supreme Court on a question of Wisconsin law?
We would say that those cases are in a positive. Those are all UCC cases. What we're saying is, were this a UCC case, which it is not, we get to the, and this is all in the context of, did the remedy fail of its essential purpose? What we're saying is, I'm sorry, let me take a step back. First of all, the Wisconsin Supreme Court would not apply the principles of the UCC to this case. It wouldn't. We were chastised in our briefing by saying that there's no reason to believe that the Wisconsin Supreme Court would extend UCC principles beyond their scope, beyond the scope of a context for a sale of goods case. We took this position in our brief, and we were criticized for saying that, no, that's not the case with Murray and his progeny leading down to the Hocking versus City of Dodgeville case. The Wisconsin Supreme Court applied UCC standards to a real estate case. That case cited the Wisconsin Supreme Court case of Dittman versus Nagel, 43 Wis. 2nd, 155, which provided, quote, "It should be stated, however, that only the common law principles of warranty apply when realty is involved. Special warranty provisions in the Uniform Sales Act and Uniform Commercial Code specifically apply only to the sale of goods, and realty is not included in the definition of goods." So here, first, this isn't even a sale of real estate case. This is a contract for the sale of loans, the sale of distressed debt. But even if it were a sale of real estate, the UCC principles still would not apply. So what we're saying, to get back to the court's question, is not that we're asking the court to disagree with the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It's that those cases just simply don't apply to this case. With respect to whether Southern Financial Group would unwind the transaction or whether it was interested in doing so, that question was asked, and we explored that issue during the litigation. And Southern Financial Group was asked, point blank, why haven't you provided the information necessary to calculate the repurchase price? Are you interested in, I think we said, unwinding the transaction? They said, we don't think we want to, because it looks like we're making a profit. We're already going to make a profit, so why would we do that? And that's exactly what the contract provided for. It set a maximum. The repurchase price is the maximum relief, whether through repurchase or it's a cap on damages. And for Southern Financial Group to take the position that the contract failed of its essential purpose, it's just wrong. The contract has met its purpose. It's limited remedies and cap on damages are clearly spelled out in the contract. The court below found and enforced the contract as a whole, and we're asking that the court affirm the court below. Unless the court has any other questions, I'll rest.
Apparently not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Whitney?
Judge Wood, I think you hit the nail on the head when you asked Mr. Ottinger, or you intimated that perhaps the rejection of the notice, SFG's notice, was frivolous. It was absolutely frivolous. And it just showed.
Well, I didn't say that. I said I could imagine some things that were.
Easily. From the plain language of the contract, there is no doubt that they warranted that the 19 collateral properties would be there.
But it's also correct that you all agreed that all this information was available to you and could have been discovered if you had looked before the closing, right?
We agreed that there are certain risks. The collateral not being there was not one of them.
Well, there were all kinds of provisions in this contract to the effect of we're all big boys and we're going to look after ourselves, right?
Yes, absolutely. There's an awful lot of risk.
And the absence of the collateral, the unavailability of it, was a matter of public record, correct?
The absence of the collateral was a matter of public record.
Okay.
That being said, you had
promised that you would look for yourself in the sense that you'd take care of yourself.
There was no duty for our client to look under the law where McFarland State Bank had expressed.
I'm not talking about the law. I'm saying in the contract you said that you would.
In the contract we said that we did everything we believed was necessary for us to make an informed decision.
But why wouldn't checking the title be one of those things? I mean, nobody prevented you. It was not a secret. And
they have not prevented us, but when they warrant that this is absolutely there, when they say we promise that these 19 collateral properties are there. My client was relieved of its duty to independently check that.
I don't mean to fence with you, Mr. Whitney. I'm simply suggesting that the rejection here was not frivolous, given the exchanges of warranties and responsibilities under the contract. We know that the district judge ruled in your favor. That's not disputed. But it wasn't frivolous to disagree.
And it clearly showed McFarland's intent to allow the unfairness to continue. When I say unfairness, they received money for collateral they did not have to sell. And when SFG provided them notice.
Let me ask you, though, I'm looking at page appendix 23, page 6. And that's where you're the buyer, right? And it says, all information and records provided to buyer have been provided for informational purposes only as an accommodation to buyer. The risk of any inaccuracy, incompleteness, or deficiency borne exclusively by buyer. And then it goes on for more language like that in paragraph G. I mean, it's a little hard to credit the idea that you were slavishly following whatever McFarland said.
It is shown that McFarland, as this loan sale agreement was drafted, was trying to design the agreement where they can giveth with one hand and taketh away with another. That's what this agreement is all about. They want this court to believe that their warranties were worthless. They want the court to believe that they did not have a duty to elect a remedy, despite the fact that the remedy provision said otherwise. When they were given notice, they could have either cured, pay actual damages, or rescinded. Had they rescinded 2 years ago, they would have sent us or given my client $1.3 million. They would have given my client the money so my client could go out and reinvest that $1.3 million in some transaction where they would be allowed to receive the value of their bargain.
So what was the total amount that you all have sold the properties?
It's $1.3 million. So, two years along...
It's greater than that, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
You've sold the collateral, right?
It was 1.27 was what we purchased the loan portfolio for,
right.
And we've sold at this stage for $1.3 million.
And how many remain to
be sold? There's three collateral properties that remain.
And
but
how much are they worth? How much are you asking for them?
I believe the rough value of the remaining collateral is somewhere in the vicinity of $300,000 or so for the fair market value. It was not McFarland's position, though, to sit back after we had provided notice and see how this was going to shake out, to see if my client would in fact make money off of the deal. This was not McFarland's option. McFarland had a duty at the time that it received notice to elect one of three remedies. And in fact, the remedy that Southern Financial Group could have been seeking could have been economically bad for Southern Financial Group. It could have been a terrible decision for Southern Financial Group to actually want to unwind this transaction and to give McFarland the loans back so they could sell the loans for the value of 16 collateral properties instead of 19 collateral properties, which is what they did. But nonetheless, it could have been a terrible idea for Southern Financial Group to want to rescind the contract, but it was their right. It was their right under the loan sale agreement to have their remedy then. And the remedy could only be cure, actual damages, or rescission. There was no option of let's wait and see.
Okay, I think we have your point. Thank you very much. The court will take the case under advisement.